You are listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprungs disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprungs with a positive message throughout. Hello and welcome to episode 41 of Tom's Hirschsprungs podcast. I bring to you again today another fascinating Hirschsprungs story by what I believe to be is probably the youngest child we'll talk about on the podcast so far, just around about 5 months old. But with me today to share her son Freddie's story is Georgina. Georgina, welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for coming along. And as I mentioned, Freddie is only 5 months old. And I think, as I said to you, my message, I said, you must be really, really busy. So don't worry if you don't want to come on the podcast. But you were like, no, it's good. We'll go for it. So thank you so much for being here, because you must be rushed off your feet with a 5 month old.
Oh, you're welcome. No, I felt like it's super important, isn't it, to capture like the information where you're at, because in a few months' time things could change again. So it was really nice when you reached out to me, because I thought it's really great time to share a story.
Fantastic timing. Thanks for so much for coming along. And just on Freddie, we'll start from the very beginning, if we may. So Freddie was born in April of this year. And then would you like to take it from there?
Yeah, so Freddie was born back in April. He was born absolutely fine, no problems. And we went onto the ward, and I mean, he was a little bit sicky, as babies are. And the midwife said to me, oh, we're not quite sure how much sick is the right amount, so we're going to call a paediatric doctor to come down. And a paediatric doctor came down. She's like, oh, he's a bit more sick than I'd expect. I'll call another doctor. And another doctor came and said, this is really normal. Babies be sick when they've been born. So that was like the first ever sign, I guess, of Hirschsprungs. But we went through another day, and pretty similar. He was a big chunky baby. He was absolutely fine, well coloured. Like, there seemed like there was nothing wrong with him. And on his second day, I was really pushing for us to go home, because he'd passed his baby checks, and the only thing that he hadn't passed was that he'd passed any meconium. And they told me not to worry about it, because, you know, it'll happen. Some babies take longer than usual, and we'll just go with it. So I was pushing, because every time I mentioned, oh, well, he still hasn't done it, or he's still a bit sicky, they said, that's normal. He looks well. He seems well. He's feeding. We've got no worries. So that was kind of the start. And then on that second day, I really pushed. I said, you know, I'm not an irresponsible person. If we go home and he's still not passing any meconium by tomorrow, we can come back and you can see him then, and we can make a plan. Like, you're not worried, then I'm not worried. And they said, no, you have to stay in. And they said, oh, we'll give him a suppository and see what happens. And I said to the doctor, great. So I'm like, what's the chances that this will work? And she went, 100%, you know, like 15 minutes, it'll definitely pass meconium, you can go home. So I phoned my husband. I said, come back, because we're going to go home. And they came and did the suppository. And an hour later, 2 hours later, nothing. And so I was really frustrated. And another doctor came, and he said, we had the same conversation again. And he just said, I'm going to go and speak to the consultant in charge, but I'm pretty sure she's going to ask you to stay. But I think you're quite responsible. I'll try and bat for you to go home. So at this point, I had no idea about Hirschsprungs. I'd never even heard the word. And the doctor came back. He said, no, consultant says she'll have to stay. She'll come and see you tomorrow and make a plan from there. So it's like, fine. My husband left. And about 11 o'clock, a doctor arrived, and he took a look at Freddie, and he said, he's got a bit of a big tummy. It's been a while since he was born. We haven't seen any meconium. We'll do another suppository in about 2 hours. We'll do an x-ray if no sign. And I was like, great, we have a plan, like something's happening. And as he walked out the room, he came back and he went, actually an hour, do the suppository, wait an hour, x-ray. I was like, great. So he left, they did the suppository, no sign. And then an hour later came and we went down to the x-ray. And just as they were about to x-ray him, I got a call from the doctor and he said, actually, I want to put an NG tube down his nose and then we'll do the x-ray. So we went all the way back up. They put the NG tube down his nose and then they said, right, go for the x-ray. So I went back downstairs for the x-ray. And I could see on the x-ray, because I was stood behind the screen, that something wasn't quite right. There were just these big, I can just know them now as what they call looped bowel, but it was just like everything didn't seem in the right proportion that you imagine it should be when you've watched TV, medical TV. And so we went back upstairs and the doctor came and took us to a treatment room. And this is like the middle of the night now. It's like 1 o'clock in the morning. And he said, I'm not quite sure with the x-ray. The radiographer is just doing like a report to see what happens, but it doesn't look quite right. So my plan is to get you back to bed. I'm going to call the surgeons at Alder Hey because that's our closest surgical centre for babies. And depending on what they say, we'll probably pop him in Skaboo, so special care baby unit overnight, and then tomorrow we'll transfer you to Alder Hey in an ambulance. He's like, it might not be anything to worry about, but I'm not sure and I don't want to do anything. And I said, no problem, that sounds good to me. Like, I was quite calm at this point because I felt like things were actually happening and we were being looked after. And at that same time, one of the nurses popped through who'd been doing the suppositories, and she said, I'm glad you're getting sorted because I thought there was quite a lot of sick on the sheet. Which he said, what's sick? And I said, oh, well, he's been being sick since like he was sort of born. But and he's like, yeah, normal. And I was like, yeah, everyone says it's normal. And then he just looked at the other nurse and he was like, I'm not really sure. Let's go straight to special care baby unit. So off we went. And that was kind of where like the wheel started turning in terms of the motion of the Hirschsprung's diagnosis. Nobody said anything to me about Hirschsprung's then, but they sort of settled him, put him on a drip. There was like some sort of multi-team phone call going on with the consultants at home, the team at Alder Hey, some paramedics in Warrington, all trying to work out what was happening next. And about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, an ambulance came and took us to Alder Hey. So it was happening much quicker than I thought I believed. And then give it a few hours, and we were at Alder Hey. We were seeing the consultant, and he said, I'm going to do some washouts. He's very backed up. And they started doing what we I now know are like irrigation. So, washing out his bowel, trying to get as much as whatever was stuck in there out. And he said, we've got some things to look at about what it could be, but I want to do some biopsies. And that will take us a few days to get him settled, but enough to do them. And so we spent 8 days at Alder Hey, and on our last day was when we got the Hirschsprung's diagnosis. So they did some suction biopsies, and the first one, which was like 1 centimeter, was inconclusive, but the 2 centimeter and 3 centimeter ones were Hirschsprung's aganglionic cells. And then they sort of said, we'd been taught how to do washouts, and they sort of said, you're going to go home, you're going to do the washouts, and we're going to go into a caseload of a surgeon whose expertise is Hirschsprung's, and then you'll probably need an operation, and that's it. And off we went home. So
Okay.
that is literally like the first, the 9 days of his life. Yeah.
So the first time you mentioned that it may be Hirschsprung's was just sort of a couple of days before you left.
Yeah, so on the day we arrived, one of the doctors had a student in. The consultant who's looking after us had a consultant in, and he said to the student, what am I looking for Hirschsprung's? What's indicative? And he said, sorry, mum. He says, we go through all sorts of diagnoses to get to what we're looking at. And he said, and it's a teaching hospital, right? So that word was mentioned. Obviously, I Googled it. I Googled everything under the sun to find out what we were there for and what it could be. So I'd read about it by the time we got the diagnosis. So we weren't surprised. I
Okay.
think we were sort of expecting that maybe, there's lots of babies who I've read about now on the internet who have the same symptoms, and then they get told it's not Hirschsprung's and they're not sure what it is. And I thought maybe we were going to be one of them. And I actually felt quite relieved when we got the diagnosis because it meant at least we had something, we knew what it was. and we knew what was going to happen, sort of. So yeah, but it wasn't really sort of described in much detail. Like that last day was like, this is Hirschsprung's, this is what it is. And yeah,
Fantastic.
you go
So,
home.
but originally, as well, I'd imagine we'll move on to this shortly, but originally diagnosed with short segment Hirschsprung's.
Yeah, so they didn't give us a specific like diagnosis of short segment Hirschsprung's. They didn't do a contrast enema when he was in neonatal. They talked about doing one and then they didn't. And when we met our consultant in person, she said there's like, you know, sometimes they'll do one, sometimes they don't. Just depends on how you respond into the washouts, which he was responding well to. So because of that, they presumed that it was short segment Hirschsprung's disease. And that because he did well with the washouts, and he actually pooed on his own a few times. We just sort of assumed, and so did the doctors, that that was a really good sign that, you know, he'd got some ganglionic cells somewhere that were causing this. And so that's just what we assumed. So we did 4 months of washouts, presuming that it was going to be short segment Hirschsprung's. We were going for a pull through surgery, and it was going to be a couple of centimeters, I guess. And that was what we were expecting.
And then it didn't turn out to be short segment. So, were you explained that the possibility that there might be long segment or short segment and they weren't sure, or did they tell you it's definitely short segment, then it turned out to be long segment?
No, they didn't say it was definitely one thing. When we met our consultant, we asked, you know, presuming that it's, you know, fairly, I would say, you know, when you don't really have the terms until someone gives you them. So like mild, I guess, is like one of the words I might have used. And she said, we can assume that, but we can never say because we don't know until we get in there. And she's like, that's why we go in and we do the biopsies. And he was going to have laparoscopic biopsies and a transanal pull through. So that was the plan. Between going home from the washouts and the surgery, we met with a nurse practitioner every month or twice a month to check that the washouts were going well, that his tummy wasn't distended. And although he had a bigger tummy, we didn't really have sort of any signs that there was anything not quite right there.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears. Beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine.
Love and laugh.
Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Kiss me quick.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
So, Freddie was fitted with or had surgery for a stoma. What
Yes.
were you explained of what type of stoma he was going to have?
So we went into the surgery thinking it was pull-through surgery. And that's exactly what everybody else thought. And we went off into Liverpool for shopping and sort of distract us from like the fact that he was in, under general anaesthetic. And we got a phone call from the surgeon to say she'd gone in, she'd done the biopsies. It was 6 hours in and she still hadn't started the surgery because every biopsy was coming back with egg ganglion cells. And it affected almost all of his large intestine. So she explained on the phone that she was going to remove a large chunk of his large intestine. And that was because where we'd been washing out wasn't clear. But above that, so across the top and down to where his appendix is, that was all distended and swollen and basically full, like a bowel obstruction. So she was going to take out that, and she'd got about 15 centimeters of bowel left, she thought, and that she was going to give him an ileostomy. And at the point on the phone call, she said she hadn't decided between a colostomy or an ileostomy. It depended on the biopsy on this last 15 centimeters, whether it was like transitional zone, where it had like a mix of cells, or whether it was, she felt that it was, it had lots of ganglion cells. So she said she hoped that we trusted her to make the decision that was in best Freddie's best interest, because she said, I want to preserve, if it works, as much as this 15 centimeters as possible to use it in the future. So that was sort of the phone call we had. And then we got back to the hospital, and a couple of hours later he came out of surgery, and she explained that she'd given him an ileostomy out of his small intestine. So he's got that. And then this 15 centimeters of bowel has been turned into a mucus fistula and a colonic blowhole. So he's got three stomas, like in a row. And this mucus fistula starts off small intestine where she's cut it for the ileostomy, and then it goes into the pouch between the small intestine and the large intestine, and then it becomes the large intestine, and that's where the blowhole is. And the idea of that between being any mucus can run out, so it stays alive and stays healthy. That sort of gives it a chance to rest because it's obviously been like the end of this completely distended intestine. And that if it did get infected, it could sort of be flushed out and cleaned with antiseptic solution or antibiotic solution, and sort of go from there. So, and that can, she said this solution that he's got now is obviously temporary, but could be years. So we, there's no rush to make any decisions going forward.
Fantastic. No, so you've got plenty of options then.
Yeah, so we're going to sit down with the Hirschsprung's panel, so our surgeon and probably a couple of other consultants who've seen long segment Hirschsprung's disease, and some researchers that work on the team that are doing research into Hirschsprung's as well, and trainees and things like that. Once the pathologist has seen all the biopsies and reviewed all of it, because that will indicate how much of this 15 centimeters works properly. And then they'll sort of come up with some solutions and plans in the future, whether that's waiting a long time before we do something, whether it's doing something sooner rather than later. But also, she explained is how well the stoma settled. So depending on like how much output he had and if he was getting on with it okay, would indicate whether we needed to make a quicker decision or we've got time. So at the moment, like he's quite settled with the stoma. He has to take loperamide and sodium, in order to balance his like his electrolyte balance, and because he had a lot of output in the beginning, but it seems to have settled down now. So it doesn't look like there'll be any rush to do anything. But we will have options for sort of reconstruction at some point. And they do, from what I've read and from people's stories, they do all sorts of weird and wonderful things to try. And give you the best opportunity to be able to go to the toilet. And but whether we keep the stoma or not is something that we'll decide in the future, I guess.
Yeah, cross that bridge when you come to it, I take it.
Yeah,
I'm
definitely.
guessing possibly by the time this podcast episode is out in, well, a month's time as well, just before a month's time, 3 weeks' time from when we're recording, you might know more in terms of answers.
Yeah, maybe. I think they said it could be, you know, a couple, 3 or 4 months, because they're going to get that pathologist to look through, and then we'll sit down and have a chat. But I can't imagine that we'll do anything for the next 7, 8 months anyway. So that'll be like a nice lull where we just sort of settle into stoma life and then go from there afterwards.
Be nice to stay out of hospitals for a while.
Yeah, I know. I counted it the other day, and out of at the time when he was 4 months old, we'd spent 31 days in hospital. So that was like a quarter of his life, which is just crazy. That doesn't even count like the appointments that don't take place in hospital. That's just like all the home visits and the doctor's appointments and all the clinic appointments. No, that's just hospital stuff. So yeah, that's it feels like quite a lot. And Freddie has been remarkably well through the whole experience. He's a well baby. He doesn't look unwell. We've had like little blips where he's dehydrated or he looks poorly, but he really recovers well. And I think that's probably why everyone thought it was short segment Hirschsprung's, because he really never had any sort of indication that he was quite poorly. So there's lots of babies out there that have a different experience and are quite unwell for a long time. So I feel like quite lucky with that.
No, that's really, really good to hear. And just talk to me a little bit just about Freddie as a person over the last 5 months. How has he changed?
I mean, he's growing like any baby. He is noisy and happy and expressive. And, it's quite deceiving that he has been so unwell. The consultant said to me, it's just a miracle that you've made it through 4 months of washouts, because she's like, we should have seen you in clinic complaining that you were struggling, that he would seem in pain, because he had like such a large bowel obstruction, so much distension, that he should have just been really not well. And we only had one instance of enterocolitis and caught it super early, so
Yes.
I felt quite fortunate with that. And that's hard as well, because when people see you look well, it's that hidden disabilities thing. People assume you're well. So people look at him and think he's a well baby, and there's sort of nothing wrong with him. And it's sort of an adjustment to remember or remind people, or particularly close people in our lives or ourselves, that he hasn't quite been, 100% well, even though he looks like it and he seems very happy.
Yeah. I think so. I think that's something that's really important to remember. And I have this obviously firsthand with having all manner of scars. But if you look at me just normally, you'd never know the difference. And I think that's the same with a lot of Hirschsprung's people. They've had, multiple operations, more than likely. Some have only a few. Some have quite a few. And I had a guest on the other week who's had 148, as she mentioned on the podcast. But I think that's a little bit out the ordinary. But you would never know. And that is something that I really wanted from the podcast as well, is to show people that you can go and do, so many things. And, Hirschsprung's, yes, there'll be difficult times here and there, of course, but there are so many things that you can go and do. And it shouldn't stop you. I mean, the 25, I believe, guests I've had on this podcast all do so many different things. And there are people who haven't had on this podcast. There's people who, it's a man I'm hopefully having on soon, who's a professional boxer, with Hirschsprung's. So, I've had actors, actresses, all sorts. So it shouldn't hopefully shouldn't stand in your way at all. And I'd like to as well just move along to where I found your story, social media, Instagram, and Facebook. And you started the or Freddie's story very early into his life. And as you said when we were talking off air, most people wait sort of 8 months to a year before starting. Why did you think, right, I'm going to start sort of pretty much straight away?
I think it was so hard in the beginning. For the first like month and a half, I didn't even know that there were groups on Facebook, and my consultant recommended it. She said, we went in to see her and she said, there, have you joined any of the family groups? And I was like, family groups, what are they? And I think it's really normal when you're going through something like this to not want to share, because it's scary and you don't know what's going to happen. And people ask questions. But I've got such a big family, and we were updating everybody through WhatsApp constantly. People were, and at the beginning, through my dad, I would update him and he would update everybody else. And then I started doing it myself. And it was really cathartic writing the updates, the daily updates about what had happened and trying to explain it. And I was searching just Instagram mostly. I didn't really start with Facebook until he was about 6 weeks old. But right from that first 10 days, Instagram, searching for people, Hirschsprungs, looking for the word, and struggling to find a lot of people, and particularly struggling to find anybody in that baby stage, that really early baby stage, because obviously that's when you're just new to it and you don't know. So I decided, and I talked to my husband quite a bit about sharing some parts of the story with people. And then I did it a few times, and actually it was really helpful for me, but also for the people and people who don't know anything about Hirschsprungs learning something new, and also meeting others who've got experience of Hirschsprungs or other conditions, you know. So that was, yeah, that's where it all started. And I've just sort of carried on connecting with people and sharing what we're experiencing as we're going through it, rather than sort of as much as I can do, while also protecting Freddie's identity. Because I felt like it was really important that this is his story, and that he shares it when he's ever ready to. You know, right now he doesn't have any choice in that. But what I could do is share my experience of this, and if and when he ever is old enough to and decides to share, then he can do that. But more about like the experience that we've been through as parents, because you know you don't expect to have a baby or a child who's got any like sort of medical needs or additional needs. You don't expect this to be the experience that you have when you have a baby. So, and that can be quite a lonely one. So I felt like it was helpful for me and for other people if I started sharing what was going on with us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, your Instagram reels, videos, posts, for anybody who hasn't seen them, they're fantastic. They explain Hirschsprung's disease so succinctly. And there's just little tips and helpful tricks. And I love there's a little glossary on there as well. About, you know, what's a stoma, what's Hirschsprung's, what to expect from this, what to expect from that, because there are so many things, and you've obviously recently gone through it, and a lot of people listening to this have gone through it as well, where you are bombarded with all of these words that you may or may not have ever heard before. You know, I mean, ganglion cells and all of these things that, you know, when I do my research on this, and I'll be totally honest, I was, before starting this podcast, I was quite ignorant to my own condition. It took me probably 30 years to start talking about it. Beforehand, it was just a part of my life. Mm. So I didn't know, I mean, many, if any of the words really associated, obviously knowing what stoma is and what Hirschsprung's disease is roughly, but having all of these words bombarded to you, it's just so helpful sometimes, because I think we all, what is it, 80% of the world are visual learners. Mm. So I think having a lot of words or written down on a bit of paper or a lot of words said to you isn't necessarily always the best way of getting information across. So just having a reel or a post or something that says, this is this and this is that and this is what I'm going through and et cetera, et cetera. That's why I love it as well. And something else you post on there is just what you do in terms of everyday life and some of your hobbies as well. And one of them is wild swimming as well. How did you kind of get into that?
Yeah, do you know, I started wild swimming during COVID. I had a friend that did it, and I wasn't really a massive outdoors girl, so I was a bit like, oh, I don't really want to do that, but totally fascinated at the same time. And I've always been a swimmer. So when I did it the first time, it was pouring with rain, and the thrill from it is unbelievable. So I just carried on. I stopped when I got pregnant with Freddie, and on some advice that I had. And as we know, you know, there's lots of medical advice out there. And I spoke to a midwife afterwards, who said, you shouldn't stop swimming. You should do what, you know, it's, everyone's going to tell you something different. She's like, my professional opinion is it's fine. So I didn't swim while I was pregnant with Freddie. And then I started again after he was born. And yeah, it's just an exhilarating experience. I don't get to do it as much as I'd like. But it's definitely one of those things that I enjoy doing. And all of us are are just more than a small part of our story. So yeah, Freddie's got Hirschsprungs, but you know, I also run my own business. I've got, you know, I've got great friends. I've got a beautiful family. I love wild swimming. I like reading. Like, there's so much more to a person than just like a smallest part of the story. So although I'm sharing as much as I can about our experience right now, because we're living in it and this is what we're going through on a day to day, I think it's just, yeah, what I've been posting is more of a whole experience of what's going on in life rather than just this one thing.
Absolutely. And that's why I really, really wanted you on the show as well, because there is, it's not just, this is a Hirschsprung story, end of. There's so much more as well. And to your point, as well, you've recently done another reel where you talked about how to look after yourself, because it's something that is so neglected, I think. And I think many, many parents will have gone through this, where you are so focused on your child being well, doing the washouts, trying to get your head around the condition, the terminology, a new routine, that you just completely forget that actually in order to do all of that stuff, you need to be looking after yourself as well and be as close to 100% as possible.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Start your day the right way with Revive Active's range of super supplements and get the most out of life. Take one power-packed sachet, mix with water, and enjoy a super tasty health drink at work, at home, or on the go. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to optimize your health and well-being to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, and more. No filler, no stimulants, no artificial colours or preservatives. Just the right mix of vitamins, minerals, amino acids and hero ingredients to help you put back what life takes out. Try our 7-day or 30-day boxes and use code UKRADIO to get a free supplement shaker. Revive Active. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Yeah, totally. And I think it took me about 3 weeks after we came home before it really hit me that what we'd been through and like all the adrenaline that sort of carries you through, but also the responsibility, because I talk about medical admin so much because there is just such a extra load of stuff you have to do. And right now, because we're settling in to Stoma Life particularly, there's just so much stuff. Like, I think I went for a walk through the day and I think I made 5 medical related phone calls while I was on that walk, and that's just like an hour out of a day, and there's just so much paperwork to fill in and care plans and all of that stuff. And I think there was like the end of the week and I was just really flagging, and I actually thought, I have not done anything for me for ages. So I was like, right, let's do some stuff for you. And then, like I said, I'm just living in the moment and posting about it as it happens. So then I just did a reel about it, made a reel yesterday and posted it today, that just said what I've been doing. And there's just no strategy behind it. It's literally just what's going on in our life. Like, I'll just post about that tomorrow. And what people ask is really helpful. Like, people have asked questions that have been helpful for me to ask because I didn't know. And also, every time I write something and someone clarifies something, or I read it back and I'm like, that doesn't make sense. It makes me learn to explain things better or more clearly. So the definitions one was totally true, because when you're in the hospital and you hear these words all the time, they just become part of your language. And then you just start using them. And then I said something about Freddie being an ostomate once, and someone said, what does that mean? And I was like, oh, I haven't even explained that to somebody I'm talking to every day. So that's why I did the definitions, and like, I'm still learning loads more definitions every day, and like different products and stuff. And it's a real whirlwind, the whole experience, stoma particularly, because there is different products out there, and you sort of get set up with your stuff and sent home. And then it's sort of often down to you to find out what works. And that's really hard because you don't know what's out there. So social media is great for that, because other people post what they use, and then you can sort of get samples and try them out and request stuff. That's really helpful. And yeah, and just tons of reading. I've read so many like medical journals, don't really know what some of the stuff is, but it's really helpful for me just to have a bigger understanding of like what our experience is. And everybody tells you something different. One medical professional tells you something different to another one. Even people who are at the top of their, sort of the field will tell you two different things. And so just being able to like sit and process that and learn a bit more about it and talk about what other people's experiences are is super helpful. So hopefully if other people are going through it at the earliest stage, that they'll find my account and not feel so lonely about it, because they'll be seeing us living it in the moment, like when he's months old, rather than me sort of telling the story but later on in his life.
Absolutely. Again, that was another reason I really wanted you on as well, because I get messages almost weekly from people who have either had just been diagnosed, or maybe their child's sort of a month or somewhere between sort of 6 months to a year. And they're saying, oh, well, I didn't know that this person had Hirschsprung's and that person had Hirschsprung's. And I know I'm not, this isn't a medical podcast, and I'm nowhere near qualified to talk about any kind of medical information. I just share experiences. But I think that type of media can be really beneficial. And I've had loads of messages, as I said, from people who do find it beneficial, and people who find your account and say, oh, actually, I didn't know that there was this type of ostomy bag. Or that's another thing that I'd imagine you found as well, in the fact that there are different types of ostomy bags. I mean, I had somebody on, this will be going out in October, so it had been a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, Tony Schneider from Ostique, who they make ostomy bags. I had absolutely no idea they existed beforehand.
And you don't know unless, one, someone tells you, two, you see it anywhere, or three, you research it yourself. So that's why social media is brilliant, because you can learn from other people about what they're using or what they're trying out. But also, like, I had no idea what a stoma was. And before Freddie's surgery, I did start looking at accounts and following people just in case, because we'd been told it was a possibility. So I was quite relieved I'd done that when we heard that he was having one, because I'd already seen what one looked like, and I could show my husband and say, like, this is what a stoma looks like. Cause you just don't know. People ask us about like wires and nobody know, like, you don't know it unless you've experienced it. And I posted on my story last week about what a stoma bag looks like and what it does. And I had like 12 messages straight away within an hour being like, I had no idea that it sticks on your skin and this kind of thing. And that's super helpful to know that, because it opens up a discussion. And, you might see someone with one, wearing one, and you see that picture, but you don't really know the ins and outs of like what it looks like, or the windows, or that you have to empty them. And some don't need emptying, some just get changed. So like the whole of that is just a big learning curve. And also, you don't always know what's on offer for you. So I did a reel and posted it on TikTok as well about Ronald McDonald House Charities. And that is my like most reached TikTok, because I posted about like, where do you stay when your child's in hospital? And I think it's just really resonating with people, because everyone knows McDonald's. They've all heard of it. They've all, when they've been through the drive-thru, there's those little penny boxes you can put your coins in. And then now it asks you on that digital screen. Do you want to round up and donate? And so many people replied and said, I've always donated and never known why. Some people said, I'm donating now because I know what it means. And then other people said that it opened a conversation for them in terms of what would they do if their child was in hospital? Like, where would you stay? Like, you just don't think of that. And I know not all hospitals have Ronald McDonald House connected to them, but Alder Hey does. And we've stayed there twice now. And as many surgeries or long-term, like longer than a night stays that Freddie's going to have in hospital, will be entitled to stay at Mac House, which is just incredible that that's there, because there's lots of research. Well, there's not lots, but there's some research into parents and the cost of having a child that goes to hospital. And it's something you just don't think about. So I had no idea when I posted that one that that was going to be something that touched people really importantly, but it really did. And I think it's just those basic things that you don't think about that you're living, that people want to know about, because they've not experienced that before. They've not thought about it. It's not till your child's poorly you need to find out where you're going to stay, or you know what to pack to go to hospital, or what do you do when you get there, or who do you see? You never know any of that stuff until you're in it. So I'm a preparer. I like to know in advance. I want to know. I say this to the doctors: you can tell me anything, everything, all of it. That's what I need to know, because that helps me think about like everything. I love reading journals and stuff like that. But yeah, you don't know about it till you're in it.
Fantastic. Yeah, no, that's such an important point, because I think, as we were mentioning off air, Ronald McDonald is something I need to be talking more about on the podcast. It's so important that I do miss it occasionally, and I think, oh, I should have said that, and I should have done this, or I should have made a post about that, or whatever. So I'm really, really glad you brought that up, because they are so important. And I know that you've done a reel as well, as we spoke about sometimes, you know, just having to sleep on a sofa or a floor, like my mum did all those years ago. And having somewhere where you can actually get, I mean, you're probably never going to sleep particularly well whilst your child's in hospital. There's still going to be things running through your head. But the fact that you can actually sleep in a bed that is going to be comfortable, and you can actually get some decent sleep, and it's like what we talked about before, about taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, that becomes really important. And obviously, Ronald McDonald houses become very, very important as well.
And I think that's really important, because, you know, all the nights I've been in hospital with Freddie, I've always stayed with him in the same room, and we're all, you know, you're offered that as an experience, like to stay with your child. And at, for example, our local hospital, yeah, I can stay with him. But what it means is for us is that my husband isn't traveling 2.5 hours to come every day, and he gets to stay nearby, that he gets to go somewhere. But even more importantly than that, they offer facilities that you wouldn't get. So washing machines and tumble dryers. Like, they have a shop. It's not even a shop. You don't pay. Just food that you can take, like cereal and snack bars and stuff like that. There's places to cook. And that's a really important thing as well. And if you're not entitled to stay there, you don't qualify, you can still get a day pass and go and use their space. So having that option, it's so much deeper than just somewhere to put your head. It's really about having somewhere to go with people that care, where you can be, that isn't the hospital, but is just offering you that extra space. So they're just incredible.
Definitely. Like that community feel that we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
And having people who are going through sort of similar experiences to you at the time, can be so beneficial. And just before we sort of wrap up here, I want to ask one more thing that you mentioned on your Instagram, something that I hadn't heard before, about weekend leave.
Yes.
Would you like to talk a little bit about that?
I hadn't heard of this either, and we were offered this. So right towards the end of Freddie's stay, where he was doing better but still needed tests and replacement fluids, because he had a lot of ostomy output, we were allowed to go home for a weekend for a trial. And, you know, they said it's not something they normally do, but I've heard from other parents now they've been offered it as well, where we could go home, stay at home for a night or two nights, try, and then come back, and at any point could return if he wasn't well. So we could go straight back and have our bed back and everything. But when we returned, they did tests and things to see how we'd got on. And that was that was just so nice because we'd been in for a while, being able to come home and just be at home and have him back home, and my dogs missed me, and just like all that stuff that you miss about being at home, having that opportunity to be at home and then knowing you've got the safety to go back just in case, and to go back and complete whatever treatment you need, or to be checked and looked after without being a full outpatient. That was such a good experience. And I'm so glad that we were offered that, because that day that we were offered it, I was really like fed up and I really wanted to come home. So to be offered that, knowing we could come back, was just amazing.
That's brilliant. And thank you so much for highlighting that as well, because I think there's so many people that wouldn't know that would necessarily exist. But we also, I know you mentioned your dogs as well. We won't get on to dogs, otherwise we will be here another hour and a half, because I can talk dogs all day. But just very quickly, what dogs do you have?
I have a 10-year-old Jack Russell Cross Corgi. She's called Maisie. And I have a beagle, and she's nearly 3, and she's wild.
Fantastic. I think all beagles are, aren't they?
Yeah, apparently they calm down around this age, but we get to see that, but she's amazing. Yeah,
I don't think I've seen a single beagle that has ever calmed down at any time. So, and I know a few.
Yeah, she's brilliant. No. We love them both. They're great, great dogs.
Fantastic. And just very quickly, in terms of the future for you, Freddie, your family, what do you see in the future?
Well, we know that he'll have probably at least 2 more surgeries, whatever reconstruction is tried, and then an ileostomy with reversal. So even if he stays and has the stoma forever, he'll need the 2 stomas taken out at some point and it turning into a permanent solution, if that's the way we go. If we go ahead with the reconstruction, it'll just be what see. We know we saw a pediatrician the other day who said it's better to go for 1 operation when they're well and bigger and get it right than have to do lots and lots. So, you know, that's what we've heard most recently. But yeah, we're going to see what happens, go with the flow there. And then I think for now, we're just going to keep sharing about what the experience looks like and what happens and all of the challenges you encounter as you do. But yeah, that's as far as I'm looking forward at the moment, I think. Just settling into this life, watching him grow and be happy and thrive, and then make a decision when we get there, which is very unlike me because I like plans, but maybe this time we'll go without a plan.
Sounds fantastic. And just also very quickly, where can people keep up with you, keep up with Freddie's story?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram at livewithgeorgina. So you can search for me on there and you'll find everything. Same on TikTok as well. Yeah. I hang out in all the Hirschsprungs groups on Facebook too, and the stoma ones now as well, like babies with stomas is one of my favourite hashtags at the moment. So I hang out there as well. So yeah, you can find me around.
Fantastic. Well, thank you ever so much for joining me. And I wish you and Freddie and the rest of your family a very successful future.
Thank you so much for having us on.
My pleasure. Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.